What's happening, everyone? This is Kyle Draper, joined as always by A'Sherrod Blakely, and you're listening to the Celtics Talk Podcast. We got a big show coming up in just a few minutes. Sopan Deb, culture writer for the New York Times, stand-up comic, but most importantly, Celtics fan. He'll be joining us on the Celtics Talk Podcast. I know, hey, this guy has more followers than Shiraz, so you know he's big
time.
He's big time, you know?
Big time.
So I'm happy to have him on. I'm excited. We'll talk about the season. You'll also hear from Scal and Coach Stevens what he might do after his coaching career. Scal sits down with him and talks to him about that. Just wanted to let you know we're coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee, just 99 cents. Any size, that's 99 good reasons to switch. Sherrod, how you feeling? First of all, this is our first one since you came back from London, big fella.
Cheers, mate. All that good stuff.
What is that?
That's like a little Baines British
thing
going on there.
That's like Australia, dude. It's so stereotypical right there. Did you have tea at 3 o'clock, though?
I had tea at 7 and 8 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah.
So the tea thing is big.
The tea thing is huge. And it's not just like sitting down having a cup of tea. It's actually like an event. You have like tea, little sandwiches, little pastries afterwards.
Really? See? No international incidents or anything like that?
Nothing that was reported.
Customs was good.
Nothing that was reported.
Immigration didn't get you or anything
nothing
like that?
Nothing that was reported. Both teams play hard.
Hey, let's talk about the Celtics. They got the win over there in London. But since being back on home turf, things haven't been good. The loss to Anthony Davis and the Pelicans, and then you back it up, you lose to the Sixers. And I'm not going to press the panic button because that's that's not what I do anymore.
It's a new year. That must be a New Year's resolution. Hold back on the panic button.
Some people are like, the Celtics need to make a move. They need to make a trade. Are you in that camp?
No. I think they have to be obviously diligent and keep their eyes open and ears peeled to opportunities. But the second one the other night to Philly, you don't got Kyrie. Obviously that's a factor. But what disturbed me more than that was just that there really wasn't anyone that took charge. They don't have a number two scorer. I was looking at the numbers. If Jaylen Brown is their number two scorer, 14.2 points a game, there are only three teams in the entire NBA that have a number two scorer that averages less than Jaylen. And we're talking about the Atlanta Hawks. They suck.
Garbage.
You're talking about the Sacramento Kings. They suck. And then you got Indiana, who they don't suck per se, but you're not talking about one of the better teams in the league either. And obviously, when you don't have someone that can fill that void, one, it shows you what they're deficient in at the moment, and two, it reminds you of just how much they miss Gordon Hayward. Because they've been rolling along, and everyone is happy-go-lucky. Yeah, the Celtics, they got this. But in those moments when you don't have a Kyrie Irving, and this was just for a shoulder injury, but it could be foul trouble or something like that down the road, who's going to be that guy to take the lead offensively and carry this team?
But you just made the case for why they should make a move, Sherrod. Because they don't have that reliable number two option.
I'm not going to make the move today. I'm saying they have to keep their eyes open for the right move. You don't just add a guy who – I mean, think about it. If you just make a trade just for the sake of making a trade and you add a guy who gets you 13, 14 points, you haven't upgraded just your damn roster. You basically added another piece to a puzzle that's already got the same pieces in the puzzle already. Lou Williams is the only guy I want.
Yeah, Lou would be nice.
Lou Williams – and I'm pissed.
They're not going to trade him, dude.
Well, they're starting to win.
Yeah. They're talking about a contract extension for that guy.
Which they should.
They should. He's been their best thing, best player.
Lou has got them in stick-em-up mode. Yep. They got to do something with him.
Got to pay him.
Because if you don't do right by Lou, Lou's going to do right by himself and somebody else.
Regarding making a move, when you look at the Celtics the last couple of games, big men have dominated them. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, 46 and 15, 16. Joel Embiid,
26, 16.
Yeah. And so as I'm driving into the studio today to debate you about this, I'm not too concerned about that, though. Because in the playoffs, you're not going to face first-round Anthony Davis, second-round Joel Embiid, third-round DeMarcus Cousins. You know, The Cavs don't have that person.
I'm disappointed.
Washington
Drapes.
Doesn't have that person. Toronto doesn't have that person. Why are you disappointed in me?
I'm disappointed.
Because I'm speaking knowledge.
Because,
because for once,
the cookies were on the middle shelf, and you reached for the middle shelf to get the cookies. You didn't leave. You looked at the cookies on the bottom shelf and said, I'm going to leave them there. I'm gonna get the big boy cookies.
Yeah, I get some new lines, man.
Bravo.
But you agree with me, though, right?
That is absolutely. And here's the thing. You're talking about two games.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at their record, they're still on pace to win 60 games this year. You're going to get Kyrie Irving back sooner rather than later. That bench is going to learn, I think, from these type of games because you're right. I mean, you're not going to be dealing with elite, upper echelon, top 10 centers, you know, every night. It's rare that you'll see them back-to-back nights. But here's the thing. The Celtics have always managed to be able to counter whatever another team's strength is, and they weren't able to do that because they didn't have Kyrie. You can live with bigs. I mean, and if you look back at the Pelicans game, the game went into overtime, and the Celtics played like crap for most of the night, and they still had a chance to win that. They were – and knowing what Kyrie's shoulder was the state of that, it makes sense why he wasn't as efficient as we're used to seeing him down the stretch.
Where did this shoulder injury come from? You know, like, is this more than just, let's give him a rest? What happened there?
Well, he re-aggravated the other night. And apparently he'd been dealing with this for weeks and just kind of playing through. But when you go back and you look at his numbers, he was ridiculously efficient. And then there was a stretch where shots just weren't falling. And they were the same shots he'd taken. And I know the law of averages says that how it is. But the kind of spacing that he was getting and the fact that he was making the most of that. And then all of a sudden, boom, it just stopped. You had to believe it's something physical. But the thing about Kyrie, bad shoulder, bad leg, he still gets you 20.
Right.
He's still going to get you 20.
Because you mentioned it. Second half of that Pelicans game, dude. I mean, you know, what he had, 3 points in the first half and then took over in the second half, got him back in that game. So I'm not worried about the shoulder. But one thing I am worried about, because we talked about it a second ago, when Kyrie is out, and this has been an issue, I think, a lot this season. Somebody has to step up. Is it Tatum? Is it Brown? Is it Al? You know, I was disappointed in that Sixers loss. Celtics loss. That nobody else, you know, took the ball and ran with it.
Well, I thought there were stretches where Marcus Morris really wanted to be that guy, attacking guys off the dribble. Which I was watching the game and I'm thinking like, okay, you're swinging it from side to side. You're taking a three. Here's a thought. How about just lowering a damn head, attacking guys off the dribble, and force them to actually move defensively rather than just staying in a stationary position. They didn't do enough of that, and that's one of the reasons why this team doesn't get to the free throw line. I mean, right now, they've got, I think, like 20, 25 games, something like that, without 20 or more free throws, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, you need those easy points when the offense bogs down. Like in the first half, they had 13 shot attempts inside the paint. And they had 13 three-pointers. The majority attempted. The majority of their shots were mid-range. They're not cracking the paint enough. And Kyrie is that guy that does that. Yeah. We know that. But Marcus Smart has gotten better at that. And we didn't see that a whole lot. But two straight losses. You're not panicking, though, right?
No.
Everything's all good.
Everything's not all good. Oh. It's not all good. It damn sure is not all good. But it's not all gloom and doom. You know, we got to, you know, break up the band. I mean – They still have the best record in the East. And, again, when you look at what is not working, it all seems fixable. But the more I watch this team play, the more I'm looking at them like, damn, they either need a guy that can give them more juice offensively than what they're getting now, or they need another player from a defensive standpoint that can just absolutely change the game. And I think at this stage, it's much easier to get a guy who can get you buckets than it is to get you a lockdown defender.
Right.
And so I think the Celtics, that's going to be their mindset going forward. Finding someone, you know, whether it's using a disabled player exception or through a trade or a guy gets bought out, they need to find a guy that can get buckets
for them. And we talked about, you know, last month, they're going to wait until for the buyout market, I think. Because what do you have that you actually want to part ways with?
That's the problem.
You know, you don't want to give up an asset, like somebody that's key to your team.
Right.
You know, what point is that? All right, we got more with Sherrod and me coming up in just a little bit. But now we got a special guest joining the Celtics Talk podcast. He is the culture writer for the New York Times. He's also a stand-up comic and longtime, big-time Celtics fan, Sopan Deb, joining the Celtics Talk podcast. So, Pan, thanks for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast. We looked at your Twitter profile. You're a very busy man. I know that. But thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I'm a big fan of you guys.
Hey, you know, I know you're a Celtics fan. Give me the origins of that. You know, when did you fall in love with the Celtics? When did you become a big C's fan?
Yeah, it's kind of nutty, actually. My first year falling in love with the Celtics was, believe it or not, Antoine Walker's rookie year.
Oh, okay.
Which I have to double check this. So whatever, I think it might have been the year that ML Carr was the coach. For some reason, I really enjoyed watching Antoine Walker play. He was this 6'9" guy, you know, who was doing, you know, behind the back passes on the break. He can post up like a power forward. He can shoot threes. And I loved that about him for some reason. Now, of course, you know, his career didn't quite go in the direction that the first 3 or 4 years looked like it might go. But I fell in love with that team for whatever reason, even though the team was really bad. And then, you know, Paul Pierce got drafted, and I was actually born outside of Boston in Lowell. So my brother is older than me. He really got me onto Celtics basketball as well. But it was that first year, Antoine Walker's rookie year, I just loved watching him play, and that's what made me be obsessed with basketball as a child.
You know, the thing I like about Sopan and his take there, he's not a bandwagoner. You know what I mean? That team won 15 games. You're a diehard Celtics fan.
That team was hot trash.
They were hot trash for years. In fact, my first time sniffing a playoff team for the Celtics as a Celtics fan was Jim O'Brien, the 2002 team. I think Rick Pitino's last year when he left and Jim O'Brien took over, I think they made a run in the second half of that season, and they had kind of an outside chance at the 8th seed. Like, that was the first time the team ever like sniffed success in my time following the team, and they weren't good. It was a bad team. I think, and even the team that made the Eastern Conference Finals, which was a really fun team to follow, wasn't very good. It had, like, I think the third leading scorer was Eric Williams, who averaged like 9 points a game behind Pearson Walker. You know, it wasn't the best basketball ever, but it was still a lot of fun to watch. That was the most fun being a basketball fan I had had, watching those young Celtics teams make deep runs.
So what has it been like for you lately? I mean, you know, you've got Brad Stevens' era last 5 years, and before that, Doc Rivers winning it all, you know, in OA. What is this recent, you know, the last decade or so of Celtics basketball, what has that been like for you?
Yeah. So the year they won the championship in 2008 was a remarkable experience, but it was different than following the 2002 team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. Because if you remember, before 2002, that team was not supposed to make the Eastern Conference Finals. They weren't. No one thought they were going to be any good. And really, I mean, they weren't. They just happened to overachieve, play great defense, and they played, and they liked playing for Jim O'Brien. When they traded for KG and Ray Allen, and they signed James Posey, the expectations change. So when you are a fan, you watch a team, and the expectations are you win every game, or if a championship or bust, it's a different expectation. So when the Celtics won a championship, it was great because of the first championship the Celtics had won in my lifetime. But on the other hand, it was almost like they were meeting expectations, which kind of changes things a little bit. Now it's different. When the Celtics, under Brad Stevens, the championship expectation right now is not there. When Gordon Hayward got hurt, they were not supposed to be a game or two behind the Warriors for best team in the league more than halfway through the season. That was not supposed to happen. Jason Tatum probably wasn't supposed to be, you know, on the fringes of the Rookie of the Year conversation. And so it's different watching this team. It's almost more satisfying in some way than watching the KG era Celtics, because they're triumphing expectations in so many different ways. And then Brad Stevens is such a wizard and as a coach that it's just as a fan, the mental expectations matter a lot. It's like being a Yankee fan in the 90s, right? It's like, if you don't win the World Series every year, what's the point? And that level of fandom is almost not as fun, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you, and I wish you could talk to my 8-year-old son, because, you know, we'll be watching games together, and he'll switch his allegiances mid-game. You know, who's ever ahead, he's like, you know, Dad, I want the Cavs to win.
Like
Cavs
father,
get down by
like
10.
Son.
Oh, I want so-and-so to win. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You got to stick with the team, you know? Like, he's a Warriors fan all of a sudden over the last 2 or 3 years, you know? And so, you know, I love the fact that, you know, you appreciate the journey. You know, that the Celtics have gone through, and especially with this new team and coming back.
Well,
from,
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. The game last year where it was game three against the Cavs, where they came back down, I think it was something like 25 points without Isaiah Thomas, on the road in game three, I think it was Marcus Smart who was the team's best player in that game, and Avery Bradley hit that last second three. That, to me, was the best playoff win I've seen in my lifetime. And I'll tell you why. Not because it was the most important win, because you knew they were going to lose a series. It was because it was on the road, and there was no reason. There was no reason for the Celtics to try in that game. They knew they were going to lose a series. They were on the road against a vastly more talented team. And here's Jonas Cherepko coming in and leading.
The Swedish bird strikes.
Right. You know, it was unbelievable. And I'm on my couch. Like, when you're down 20-plus points to a better team in the playoffs without your best player in the second half, almost every team in that situation lays down. The Celtics didn't. And that, to me, is one of the most fun games I've ever seen. You know, just as a fan, because they had every reason to give up and they didn't. But this is what I mean about triumphing expectations.
This Celtics team, you're right. I mean, it seems that's kind of been the unspoken narrative with Brad Stevens, is that they tend to play better than maybe the talent might suggest. How do you think that's playing out now this season, though? Because when you look at their roster, I mean, even with Gordon Hayward, they still weren't necessarily considered the odds-on favorite to come out of the East. But without him, they're still at the top of the East. I mean, when you look at the Celtics and you look at some of the other teams in the East, Cleveland comes to mind right away. Are they where they should be right now? Or are they a little bit better than they should be?
They are probably better than where they should be, but also better than what people thought they would be, if that makes sense. As in, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle there. Mm-hmm. Do I think that they can beat Cleveland in a 7-game series right now? I'm a little skeptical because, I know that Cleveland is going through their doldrums and whatnot, but, you know, until Cleveland gets knocked out, it's hard for me to think that, you know, the Celtics are better than Cleveland at this point. In terms of, you know, Brad Stevens does have a luxury in that the roster that Danny Ainge has constructed for him, mm-hmm. they seemingly have skilled players all up and down the roster. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's a single liability, right? So even when Daniel Tyson's on the floor, you know, he is probably with the Celtics' eighth man, ninth guy. Right. Even when Daniel Tyson's on the floor, there is something of skill that he's bringing, right? He has range. He's rarely making mistakes out there. He's a decent rebounder. He's a good defender. Everyone can kind of contribute in some way. Now, there are some people that are more inconsistent about it than others. But if you look at, the Cavs, if you go past their top, you know, 6 or 7 players, there's a real big drop-off. So Brad Stevens is able to benefit a little bit in that he can really mix and match more so than a lot of other coaches can. Now, the flip side of that is that Danny Ainge has also constructed a roster that is to Brad Stevens' strengths, right? Because Brad Stevens likes guys that can play three positions. He likes guys that can, you know, and he gets the most out of them. So it's very much kind of a symbiotic partnership here. And so one thing I'm very impressed with on kind of a nightly basis is that Brad Stevens, no matter what you can say about him, whatever you may say about his in-game coaching or whatever, he gets the most out of his players, and they seem to really like playing for him. And that's something that you can't really buy.
No, I agree. And you look at, you know, guys like Jay Crowder, career seasons under Brad, Isaiah Thomas, Jonas Jerebko,
oh, sure.
Kelly Olynyk.
Chris Humphries.
And so you're right. He does maximize what he has.
The only exception that I can think of is David Lee.
David Lee
was a Celtic for, I think, was he 60 games, if that? And he was,
which is 59 too many, but
David
that's
Lee did
story.
Not work. Yeah, right. David Lee was the only one that I could think of that did not flourish in the Brad Stevens. But you know what? Again, he's one of those guys that kind of in the new NBA got swallowed up a little bit, right? Because he was like kind of at the end of his career, and his game was much more designed for the 2000s basketball. And David Lee had a very good career, and he won a ring and all that. Good for him. But he is the only player that I can think of that did not play well with Celtics.
And you know firsthand as a Celtics fan, they lose a game or two, blow it all up, got to trade everybody. The world is coming to an end. They got to make radical changes. But what are your thoughts about Boston making a deal at the deadline? Do they need to make a deal or should they stand pat?
Well, the thing is, a lot of this kind of hinges on the DPE. You know, a lot of people are like, yeah, Ainge should make a deal. But, like, you know, it takes two partners to make a deal. Mm-hmm. So we also don't quite know what the trade market is right now. And so the Celtics have a couple of interesting pieces, right? They have the DPE. They have a suddenly very enticing Memphis pick. They have potentially a Lakers of the 2-5 pick next year. But what's the market? Who's available? And what are the Celtics' needs? And remember, the Celtics only have one open roster spot, from my understanding, because even with Hayward out, it's not like it creates a roster spot. I am of the belief that unless there's like a home run deal, which of course is like an easy thing for like a fan to say, unless it's an amazing deal, don't make it. But I don't think the Celtics right now they're kind of in the driver's seat, right? Mm-hmm. They're ahead of the Cavaliers by a good 5 or 6 games. They're ahead of the Raptors, I think, in the loss column by a good 3 games. There is a small but distinct possibility perhaps Gordon Hayward comes back in April or May. And so unless there's a home run deal, I'm just not sure what the need is that Gordon Hayward's not going to fill later in the season. I'm just not sure, but then again, I'm not sure that the trade market is what it was in the offseason, right? The trade market was very, very bubbling in the offseason with Melo and Paul George and Jimmy Butler. I'm not sure that market exists right now at this trade deadline.
No, I'm with you, but, we saw a guy this week that, if he ever was to become available, Anthony Davis, and mind you, I don't think he'll become available. I don't think New Orleans will ever trade him unless he marches into Gentry's office and says, get me out of here, in Dell Demps' office. But with that being said, play the game with me. How much are you willing to give up for Anthony Davis?
A lot, and I'll tell you why. I'm willing to trade Tatum. I want to trade – because, remember, Anthony Davis is in his mid-20s. He is what you draft and hope – he's what you hope – Jason Tatum becomes. He's what you hope Jaylen Brown becomes. He is the max of that. So we have all these assets that we're hoarding, but the maximum that those assets become is hopefully someone as good as Anthony Davis is. And that's very unlikely, And so you make the trade. Now, depending now, if they're asking for like 4 starters and every single draft pick that we have, now of course you pause and think about it, but am I willing to give up Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis? Yes. Because it's not like you're trading for a 30-year-old Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is still very young. But the flip side to that, as you mentioned, I don't think Anthony Davis becomes available because I think he likes playing in New Orleans. I think that he likes playing with DeMarcus Cousins. And I think the Pelicans actually have – I know their record doesn't show it this year, and they just lost to the Hawks after beating the Celtics. But I think the Pelicans actually are going to cause an unexpected amount of trouble in the playoffs. And I'm just watching that Celtics game the other night, and between Boogie and Anthony Davis, how do you guard the two of them? And with Rondo kind of, at least on some level, he's a perfect facilitator for them. And Drew Holiday is a very, very good guard. And then once they get Ben Solomon back, it's a very good team. And so I think Anthony Davis is not unhappy there, and he probably won't be unhappy there for the foreseeable future. So I don't think he becomes available, but if he becomes available, yes, I want to trade Tatum, probably Jaylen Brown, who I'm not sure what Jaylen's feeling is at this point. I don't know if it's Jimmy Butler or if it's like Rudy Gay, but we'll see, right?
Yeah, and I'm with you on the Pelicans. I think that first-round matchup, long as it's not Golden State, but a 3-6 matchup, that would be tough.
No, but here's my thing. If it is Golden State, I still pick Golden State to win, but look at the Golden State roster, and you look at Boogie
How do
you look at Anthony Davis? How do you defend those guys? And if you got Rondo playing like
but
national TV game Rondo,
I know,
and
I
your
agree.
Boy Drew Holiday, as you know, and we both agree, is one of the more underrated guards in the game.
I agree.
They could cause some major
problems. But then on the other end, how do they guard Golden State? You know, four perimeter guys. That's the only thing. You know?
I just don't think Golden State is built to defend two elite top five, top 10 caliber players and a perimeter group of guys who can knock down shots.
Yeah,
that'd be a very good series.
We need the Pelicans to tank. You know what I mean? That's because you're right. I mean, I think they're in the fifth spot
and for
right
now. First, the thing about Davis, which makes him remarkable, is that he can hang with the Warriors. He is athletic enough that he can, you know, get up and down the floor. He can guard Draymond and do stretches guarding Durant. Boogie is the one who is not terrible. He's a good defender now. He didn't used to be. But Boogie is the one that would be most problematic, I think, for the Pelicans in the series against the Warriors. But then again, if you flip that, who on the Warriors is guarding DeMarcus Cousins on the block?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Zaza?
I think Boogie would eat up Zaza. I think that, and even if he didn't, I mean, Zaza plays, what, 20 minutes a game?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, Draymond is an excellent defender, one of the best in the league, obviously. But I'm not sure that he would be able to, you know, contain Boogie as, you know, that much. Now, with that being said, they'd probably win the series. And then the real concern with the Pelicans that they play well, they don't play well for long stretches. They don't maintain the intensity for a long period of time. You know, I thought that the two-game stretch where they beat the Celtics and lost to the Hawks was so emblematic of their season. I mean, there's a reason this team is barely over 500. It's not because of injuries. It's because the intensity and the consistency is just not there for them. And that will end up hurting them over the long term.
Yeah, but before we let you go, real quick, what do you make of all, you know, the current state of the NBA? We got a lot of fights this weekend, a lot of tough guys out there. The Rockets going into the Clippers locker room. I know Adam Silver doesn't want that to, you know, be the talk of the league, but some pretty big headlines this week. You know, pretty fun, interesting stuff to talk about.
So I was of two minds of the Clippers-Rockets thing, which is I watched the whole game. And it was very chippy. Ariza, you know, was particularly chippy, and you could just tell that he was extra angry. Blake and Ariza were going at it all game. Here, I'm of two minds. Right before I went to bed, I was laughing very hard at the whole situation. The whole thing was what Shaq and Chuck and Kenny were doing on set. That was me at home. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. The second part about it is, you know, I saw a bunch of quotes. They're like, oh, they're NBA players. They're not going to fight. As if that's a bad thing, right?
Right.
You don't want
them
to be fighting. You don't want them to be. What you want to do is you want to leave it at humor. What you don't want is for them to be actual, you know, Steven Jackson going into the stands in 2004. You know what I mean? Well, you don't want that. Remember that when players actually fight, okay, that causes problems for the league. That 2004 Malice in the Palace was a huge brand issue for the NBA for a long time. That they've only in the last 5-10 years, thanks to a brand new crop of very, very likable stars, have only just recently begun to come out under. So, I mean, it's great that it's funny. It's also great that it didn't go past being funny. And I think that we as a society are like, oh, look at these fake tough guys. It's good that they're fake tough guys. It's not, you know, we don't want them to be actually throwing punches and you know, because it's just not good for the league for that to happen.
And they're not built for that. I mean, there's way too much financial setbacks that will occur if you.
They're only costing themselves money.
Yeah, like my man Aaron Aflalo when he swung at the kid from Minnesota.
Yeah,
bad idea.
Bad idea.
Yeah, not great. That was not great. But like even that will occasionally happen throughout the course of the game. Throughout the course of a year, every now and then happen. What you don't want is for it to become the norm, because the basketball's popularity is very quickly rising right now, while a lot of other sports, baseball and football in particular, are really declining in popularity. And one of the reasons the NFL in particular is declining, as you and I we all know, is because of the CTE issue and concerns about the game's safety. Basketball doesn't have those headlines, but when you start having those kind of headlines, you know, you're kind of hurting yourself in that respect.
Yeah, no doubt. Last question. Gordon Hayward, He's working hard to come back. I don't think he should. Like, if he's cleared, you know, in early March, okay, you got plenty of time. But if it's like April and the doctor say, yeah, I mean, I would rather him have a whole offseason, the training camp. What do you think? Is he coming back?
Well, here's the thing. If he's medically cleared to play in March, he's medically cleared to play in March, and there's no real article, or there's no real reason to keep him out. I mean, if the doctor said, hey, he's good to go, and Gordon Hayward says, hey, I'm good to go, you know, he's already been through a full training camp. You know, if he feels like his conditioning is up, I do think, you know, whatever Gordon Hayward should, no matter how good the Celtics are, even if it's they're going to the finals or whatever, he should not do what Isaiah Thomas did, right, which is play through it, you know, because right. that's putting his own body kind of at risk, and that's what you don't want to do. But if he's 100% and the doctors think he's 100% and he thinks he's 100%, then that's the end of the discussion. And he's clearly, I mean, he's already shooting. He's already taking shots, I believe, was what Steven said this week. That's impressive. That's an incredible amount of progress. I'm still skeptical we see him this year. But, you know, look, if he's ready to come back, he's ready to come back. And I think every doctor would say, like, there's no point in holding him back if physically he's ready and mentally he's ready.
Sopan Deb joining the Celtics Talk podcast. Sopan, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for continuing to support
the
Celtics. No problem, my friend. We'll have to do it again sometime soon.
All right, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Sopan Deb. You can always follow him on Twitter at Sopan Deb. Now let's get to into a great conversation with Scallon, head coach Brad Stevens. This week, they sat down and talked about if the coach has put any thought into what he might do after his coaching career. Here's another edition of Stevens and Scal.
A few times in all the interviews that you do allude to one day not doing this, right? So I want to go back.
One day not doing what?
Coaching.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I haven't done that in all the interviews, just when I'm asked.
Some.
When somebody asks, yeah.
Okay, so first of all, when you were done playing college, playing. Did you miss it?
Like, absolutely.
How long?
Right away.
Okay.
Right, I was in the very fortunate position of having a job offered to me after my junior year, and you take it.
Yeah. It's economy for sure.
And then, you know, after as my senior year wound down, as I got into the summer right before I started the job, then I started thinking about, man, I'd like to do this again. And a large part of my impetus for doing that was the NCAA tournament and getting a chance to coach and be a part of a team and compete. For sure.
Did you miss your guys in college? When you were done with Butler, did you miss college?
The people.
Okay.
But the game, I enjoy the NBA game more.
So then here's the final one, right? What do you think you'll miss the most?
I don't know. I hope this is far down the road.
No,
but who knows?
I know, but it's just like if I run out of questions to say, I got to use something.
Never as good as you think you are. Never as bad as you think you are. And you're never far from being gone.
No,
maybe I can just sit here with you and we can talk about it.
But people are interested if you're not the coach of the Celtics.
Especially without a personality.
True.
I would be in trouble.
So what would you miss? What would you not miss? Forget it.
I'd miss everything. I'd miss everything. But I think at the end of the day, it's all about the people. All about the people at Butler, you know, whatever the records are, whatever the tournament runs were, like it's all about the people in the locker room.
Yeah.
It's all about the people here. It's about the people that have been through here before, the players that are here now, the people you get a chance to work with every day, the support of the ownership and you know, the fans that you come across. And so it's only about the people. The game is a fun challenge every night. But, you know, the people you get a chance to be around far supersede it.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Coach.
Good stuff from the coach and Scout. Don't forget we have other podcasts here at NBC Sports Boston. It's Quick Slants, the podcast. Comes at you with Tommy Curran, Phil Perry, and Gerard Mayo, looking ahead to what the Patriots need to do against Jacksonville's defense. Plus, Mike Girardi and Dan Copen weigh in on the AFC Championship on a new Expats podcast. Make sure you subscribe to any of NBC Sports Boston podcast on any of your favorite apps. Great show, A. Sherrod Blakely.
Yes, it was. This was good, man.
You know what I'm excited about, big fella?
West Coast
is the best coast. Me and Sherrod going on the road with the Celtics. LA, Golden State. I'm telling you, I might tell the fam just to ship my stuff out there. I'm staying. Hey, it's like 70 something degrees in LA right now, big fella.
Yeah, but what will it be when we get there?
I know, right?
Exactly. And I'm going to blame you.
Hey, maybe we'll have to take this podcast on the road next week as well and you know, get some West Coast guests out there as well. All right, A'Sherrod Blakely, thanks so much. Another great episode of the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you check us out on all your favorite podcasting apps, and we'll see you next time.
We out!